I just want to quickly remind everyone tuning in on the radio that they're listening to KPCW Park City. And with that, I'd like to open up for some audience questions. Please try and make your questions brief so we give these guys as much time as possible to actually answer them.
Very good. Glenn Wright from Park City. I do have a perspective on how the system worked the last time in 2011. I was involved with fair boundaries just before that. We didn't get on the ballot, but we took our measure to the legislature. We were a rule-based system similar to what Better Boundaries has now. And we actually had somebody draw a map based upon those rules and submit it to the legislature. I testified probably half a dozen or so times at the legislature, and primarily in front of the redistricting commission. Mostly I was talking about House districts, and I spoke to the leadership of both the Democratic and Republican Party at that time. The first piece of gerrymandering that was done in 2011 was the Republicans cut the state up into two large districts, one Democrat and one Republican. And they told the Democrats, you can draw your boundaries any way you want to inside this boundary, and we got the rest of the state. And the Democratic part of the state was heavily Democratic, basically Salt Lake City and a little bit of Summit County. Republicans had the rest of the state, including some areas that could have been swing districts. Not a whole lot. I don't think there was going to be more than about another six seats that Democrats could have picked up in a good election year. But that's the way it was done. When we drew our map, we actually got some negative feedback from the Democrats because we didn't know where legislators' residences were. So we actually put some Democrats in the same district. So both parties were against our effort at that point. But the entire process was to protect the incumbency. And the person who was drawing the Republican seats for the House was actually Logan's predecessor, which finally came back to bite him. But that's the perspective that I saw from being at the legislature, talking to the leadership numerous times. So I'll ask all five of you, is that a fair system?
Logan, we'll start with you.
I think that's one of the principles that Better Boundaries has actually nailed and hit straight on is, I don't think the process really needs to look at where your incumbent lives. Incumbents, I mean, no one has a right to that seat. And I think that is a principle that we all share here. And I think if we pooled across the state of Utah, everybody would have the same opinion. And that's one of the frustrations. And knowing the process last time, it was a complex situation because incumbents do like to protect themselves.
Meredith, would you go left or right? Or Jeff?
I think on that note, we should just vote right now.
No.
Meredith, go ahead.
I would just like to point out, so it's been brought up by Jason earlier this evening about Arizona kind of being a shining star of having an independent commission draw the districts for Arizona, and that happened in 2000. And just as recently as 2016, they were rated the fourth lowest for the effects of gerrymandering in their state by the Associated Press. So they're doing a great job, and there's been a lot of legislators on both sides who've been pretty ticked off about the districts along the way. And while that's created some turmoil within Arizona, it's still recognized nationally for its lack of effective gerrymandering, and that's directly tied to the independent commission that's drawn the district. So is everybody going to be happy along the way and sing kumbaya and think it's awesome? Not necessarily, but that doesn't mean that the process isn't working. So,
Jeff?
From the campaign perspective, we're not about an outcome, we're about a process. We are a bipartisan, multipartisan group, and so we have had a wonderful time putting together Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliated independent voters. And so we're not looking for an outcome, we're looking for a structural reform here. And this structural reform is for the future generations of Utah.
Derek?
Yeah, so I don't want to echo Representative Wild's comments about the incumbent issue and, you know, drawing lines for incumbents. I don't think anybody at least in this room, I imagine not anybody would really get behind that. As far as whether the process we have is a good system, I know you were more asking about how the process went last time, but I'm going to address more of the bigger question of how the process generally works. I think the best process for most things when it comes to be it redistricting or other policy areas is to have folks who are accountable to the voters make the decisions. And I kind of look at it maybe in the way that, right, the comment about, I believe it's from Winston Churchill about democracy, it's the worst system except all the others. You know, it's a similar thing here. So if we're unhappy, for instance, about how the legislature draws the lines, again, at least we have some form of, we can go and try to organize and defeat our legislator and boot them out of office. You may not be successful, but you have a chance. If judges get involved in drawing lines, well, good luck, because they're not elected. And if you don't like the lines they draw, too bad. And I think the ballot initiative, Prop 4, is going to point in that direction, which in Utah creates a very interesting circumstance, because the Constitution says the legislature is supposed to be the ones making those decisions. And so we're going to put judges in the very uncomfortable position of having to decide, do I get involved and draw these boundaries because maybe the process has been delayed and the primary elections are about to come, or the signature gathering time period is about to start, so they have to have maps, and so they're going to have to violate the Constitution, the plain language of the Constitution, in order to enforce Proposition 4, and which effectively creates a constitutional crisis. Or they're going to boot it back to the legislature, and we're going to have the same system that we're all railing against, you know, where the legislature is still drawing lines and making the decisions. So again, it kind of comes back to, does this really solve that issue? And I think the answer is no.
And Jason.
I just want to acknowledge Representative Wilde for basically saying incumbency shouldn't matter. That's a pretty tough thing for a politician to say, to use another Churchillian statement. That's kind of standing up in the trenches and showing yourself to the enemy. So I respect that, because I think that's something you don't hear very often. And I want to get back to the process side as well. I think, you know, if you go back and reread the newspaper articles from 2001 or 2011, you see just a real crazy atmosphere around redistricting. There was the donut map. There was the stars and stripes map. There was the pinwheel map, the reverse pinwheel map, I think. And all these things were sort of thrown against the wall. And at some point, it kind of became a circus. I think Republican member of the Senate created his own donut map, which was supposed to be the safe Democrat map, to make it an unsafe Democrat map. So it was kind of thrown back and forth. What I think this proposition does is it gives some real transparency and legitimacy to an independent group that can come up with a map that can kind of go toe-to-toe with the legislature, because there's a huge power dynamic for me sitting in my basement doing my map and sending it up to the legislature and saying, hey, take a look at this, versus a group that the legislature has put together but is also operating independently that comes up with their own map based on some really important guidelines. One more thing I wanted to mention was, if we're interested in watching what happens when a judge comes in and changes district lines for an election, we just have to go to San Juan County, Utah this year. We have a very important election coming up, new lines drawn by a federal district judge with help from, I think, a professor from California, where that election could change the political dynamics of San Juan, which hasn't happened for generations. So we'll see something there, and we actually see how upset people can get when that happens. But then also, you start to see some of the importance of, well, was the old system fair? Is the new system fair?
I have a question. Wasn't San Juan originally drawn by a judge?
San Juan was racially drawn several times in the past 40 years.
By a judge?
The one that did it this time was a professor at California Irvine who came up with the district maps. So it wasn't drawn by a judge, but it was through a lawsuit that allowed for these new districts for school board and for county commissioner to come in. And for the first time, there could be the possibility of a Navajo majority on the county council. Yeah. So you could say it's racial. You could say it was racial before. But it was not a judge drawing it. He actually got what they call a special master, who was an expert in this issue, to come and do it. So some parallels to what's going on, but also quite different in the sense of we're dealing with the Voting Rights Act and racial issues, which are part of the Prop 4, but not necessarily the main part.
Jeff, go ahead and jump in.
This is exactly why we need an independent commission. The citizens of Utah, I think, have an important role to play, and the Constitution gives them that role. And this really comes down to we the people. And you know, you can talk about how the legislature and the process that we've created is maybe flawed or what have you, but the current system's flawed. And I don't accept that the current system is acceptable. I don't accept that just because it's an imperfect system that we can't make it better. I mean, the whole point of our country is to make a more perfect union. And I think we're trying to make this a more perfect union. And don't let perfect be the enemy of good. And let's move forward and try to, you know, fix what we think is a broken system.
Derek, go ahead as well.
Yeah, I think the San Juan case is very instructive, actually, into one of the potential ramifications of Prop 4, because again, if it does still go to courts, so now potentially maybe we have someone out of state drawing our maps. And is that better than the legislature? Maybe it is, you know, like, let's have that debate, but at least have that debate rather than saying that we're gonna, you know, just solve the system with something that doesn't really address the system that it's trying to solve, because the Constitution is where that system lies. And maybe secondly, I think to Jeff's point about that the current system is flawed, that's true, it is flawed. I think the case of those who are concerned is not that it's perfect, it's just that this is gonna make it worse. Because again, it's gonna throw a lot into courts. And I get the argument is that that's gonna happen anyway. But if that's gonna happen anyway, then maybe we ought to wait till it happens so we can figure out how that problem can really be solved, rather than proactively trying to do it in a way that creates a new avenue to get into the courts that is supposed to then prevent the courts from getting involved, which again just doesn't, on its face, is incoherent. And so, you know, it's not so much the perfect enemy of the good, it's let's not choose the bad in our pursuit of the good.
Jeff, one more quick response from you.
I think this is going to ward off litigation, as we've seen in other states. Iowa, I think, is a shining example of they've had no litigation. The integrity is there. The voters are very happy. Iowa, you know, you never hear about it in the news. We don't want to be in the news. We want to be a shining example in the United States of a good redistricting process. So I think this is going to ward off litigation. I think this is going to ward off contention. And I think this is going to be a much better system.
We've got another audience question. Go ahead.
Yes, if you look at the Lieutenant Governor's site that has the arguments for and against, I noticed in the argument against, fairly early on, the gentleman suggested that this was all a bunch of liberal Democrats in Salt Lake City trying to get a seat. So I'm afraid that Mr. Monson, I'm not sure how confident I am that the legislatures, given that statement, are really going to be so accountable. I don't know if that particular representative is in a seat that perhaps is competitive or not, but this is the kind of thing that gives me a concern, is that the people who are defending the current system, or the lead person doing it, is explicitly calling out partisan rhetoric where this is a nonpartisan issue.
Derek, go ahead.
Yeah, excuse me, I think I'd approach that the same way I've approached a lot of the comments here, that's a nice bumper sticker statement, and let's dig beyond it to the facts and the realities. And you know, the money might be coming from interested people, and they may have their own political views, but that's how every campaign is run. That's how every ballot initiative works, right? I mean, that's how our system works. Interested people get involved. So yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a particularly strong argument to me, but I understand why they make it, because it's a ballot initiative. And so you gotta find little pithy comments that resonate with people, and getting to deeper issues and to the real facts of the matter and the complexities just doesn't tend to happen in a ballot initiative. And I think that's true of Prop 4 as it is of any other ballot proposition.
Jeff, you're wanting to jump in as well there.
This is a bipartisan, multipartisan group, and we have gone to great lengths to make sure that we put together a proposition that met all the basic needs of the individuals involved, which are Republicans, Democrats, individuals. We have business people. We have individuals that you would recognize. We have politicians. We have citizens. We have, you know, your neighbors. This is a truly bipartisan effort, and it's been a great time. I mean, my co-chair Ralph Becker, the previous mayor of Salt Lake City, we've had a wonderful time getting together and doing something bipartisan. When I can sit up on a stage with the ACLU and agree on something, I think that's a pretty good day. I think our country needs more bipartisan, more multipartisan initiatives, and let's work together to solve some of our problems, and that's what we're doing on Prop 4.
Meredith.
I'd just like to jump in and say, on behalf of the League of Women Voters, this is the only ballot initiative that we support as well, along with the ACLU. And the League, if you're not familiar, is a nonpartisan organization. So we are just solely exist. We're coming up on our 100th birthday in 2020. But our mission and our purpose is as relevant now as it was through the years, and that's to support voter engagement and defend democracy. So that's why we're on board.
We've got another audience question.
Yeah, this is just basically a question for information. If, as you said, this will probably have to be tweaked and to be made better than in what it might be. Would this have to be another proposition, or how do you go about, can you tweak it as you're working it, or how would that work?
Derek, go ahead.
Yeah, so I mean, honestly, so you can't touch the ballot proposition until it gets voted into place, first of all. So that's just how the process plays out. But yeah, my guess is, and this isn't based on any inside information, I don't have inside information on this, my guess is that if this passes, it's going to be not insignificantly changed by the legislature because of the problematic elements in it. I doubt the legislature will be comfortable with a system that's designed, not necessarily intentionally, this isn't common on motive, but by the nature of its policy components, is designed to create lawsuits over district maps. And I think they'll come in and try to fix that. If I were advising them, I would say keep the commission, because I think that's a great component to allow people to get involved in the process. Keep as many of the rules or of the guidelines as you can. I might make them a little less prescriptive, so that you have to follow this order of priority, which is kind of what the initiative says. But I think the other elements, yeah, are likely to be open season, just because I think the legislature tends to value its constitutional duties. They take an oath to defend that, the Constitution, that is. And so I think they'll come in and defend their constitutional duties should the ballot initiative pass.
Real quickly, Representative Wild, I'm curious if you think there is an appetite at the legislature to change Prop 4 if it does pass in November.
I would have to say there's always some representative out there that's going to want to change something. So to actually come out and say no one will do anything, is that would be a lie. The question will come is, and I kind of agree, if it passes, I think the very basic structures that are being put into place here and some of the principles that Better Boundaries are fighting for actually need to be kept in place. Now, how the process is put together, timelines, how often it needs to go to a public review process, how long those public review processes are going to take, on whether it's a state level, the district level, those can be tweaked in my mind. But I think the very basic element of we need to probably stick with an independent commission, those will be probably kept in place. As a body, I think that will probably happen.
Jeff, it looked like you wanted to jump in also.
We have worked very hard to keep this constitutional, and the past Chief Justice of the Utah Supreme Court has said this is constitutional. So we feel like this is constitutional, and we hope the legislature respects the will of the people.
Another audience question. Please start with your name.
Julie Crittenden. And I'm interested in the fact that all the conversation tonight has been about how we get to elect people. I think that gerrymandering goes a lot further, and it goes into things that all of you have touched on tonight. What happens with gerrymandering when somebody is elected through gerrymandering? They're protected. They're in. They don't have to work. They don't have to communicate. You say, if you don't like what they're up to, change, get rid of them. But we don't know what they're up to. I grew up in a world where your legislators sent out brochures, sent out papers, you know, tried to communicate with their people. Nobody does that anymore. They sit there, and I'm sure they pass papers around. I'm sure they work really hard at the things they care about. But we don't have any idea what that is. When you say voter participation is low, why do you suppose? Because no one knows anything. Of course President Trump can get himself elected. He goes on TV and he says all these outrageous things and he gets an audience. But your local legislators don't do that. And mostly because they are sitting very comfortably on their thrones that have been gerrymandered. Now maybe Prop 4 is not going to solve the problem altogether, but even if it provides transparency, we are one huge step away from where we are now. Huge. And if judges intervene, then we can see that. Then we can react to that. If, you know, people in the legislature react after it passes, let's say, we can see that and we can identify that. But what happens now with gerrymandering is, you know, so many of us are just, no, it doesn't matter what I think. And I have no idea what they're doing up there.
Do you have a question for any of the panelists?
I'm just looking for reassurance.
Jason, we'll start with you.
Sure. You know, I think you touch on something there in that there are different levels of importance to the political process. And Derek has mentioned the idea of voting and campaigns and kind of the politicking aspect of going out and trying to sell yourself to the populace and win votes or you know, get elected. But I think redistricting and sort of choosing the boundaries for where political, you know, politicians run and where people vote is foundational. It's the most important part. It's the beginning part. It's in the Constitution. The census is in the Constitution. This is all something that our founding fathers thought a lot about. And I think if you got to get that right, because if that's wrong, then everything that's built on top of it is shaky. Redistricting and how we elect people from the boundaries that we choose is very important, and we need to do a better job in Utah. Otherwise, I think, as you're saying, that maybe what we see at the top of the building isn't as stable because what's at the bottom is starting to rot a little bit.
Derek, what's your reaction?
Yeah, first of all, I completely empathize and agree with the feeling, because I feel it too, that we're not being listened to as people by a lot of our elected officials. I think that's true at a national level and elsewhere, but particularly at a national level. I think the characterization that state legislators don't communicate with their voters, I haven't seen that. So I've been working with legislators at Sutherland for about a dozen years now, and I can't remember how many times they've come forward to me with a constituent survey that they sent out to people saying they were getting their input, they were asking for their opinions. Now, is that like the perfect system? Of course not. But are they simply sitting around doing nothing? Well, that to me says that that's not true. And as far as not knowing the process, not knowing what's going on, you know, there are avenues for us to get informed on those things. So in the last redistricting round, I believe there was something along the lines of 30 meetings around the state, something like that. The redistricting committee went around to different areas of the state so that everybody could come and have a chance to give their input. They voted on a piece of legislation that enacted the maps. And that wasn't a chance for people to reach out to their elected official and say, I like this map, I don't like this map, you should vote for it, you should vote against it. And I can tell you from very, upfront professional experience that it really only takes 10 or 15 contacts to a legislator to have an influence. They're not getting calls every day on every issue. Now, there may be some issues where they are getting a ton of feedback, and so having more people is going to be necessary to really sway, because they, you know, getting overwhelmed in one direction and 10 or 15 people in the other is not likely to sway that. But on most issues, it doesn't take that many people organizing and just reaching out with an email or a phone call saying, we think this is how you ought to vote, for them to take that into consideration. So I think the avenues are there. And in particularly in the world we're in today, all of the information and ability to track this stuff is online. You can go and listen to every debate on legislation that happens in a committee hearing, in a floor vote, in a commission. And you can go attend those commissions, those committee hearings, and voice your opinion. They welcome it. They ask for it. There's time set aside in every committee hearing. Does anybody have anything to say from the public? Now, I'm not saying it's perfect. I'm not saying they can't do more. But I think to characterize it as state elected officials are not doing anything and it's a completely untransparent process, I just don't see that. I don't think that's true.
Here's what I see. I have called my legislators many times. I've also gone to their offices and handed over petitions, letters, whatever. And this is what I get. May I have your zip code, please? That's it.
Jeff.
I'm Park City. All right? So that's what I'm saying. I don't get a letter back saying, oh, thank you very much. This is our position and this is why. You know? I get, may we have your zip code, please? Thank you for the call.
Jeff, you wanted to jump in there.
190,000 fellow Utahns, thousands of volunteers agree that we have an imperfect system. And is it a perfect solution? No, but I think it's a better solution. And so I think that why we're all putting so much time and effort, volunteers, people across the state, fellow citizens like yourself, is because we think we can do a better job. And so I hear what you're saying, and I don't know about your particular situation, but I'm telling you that I think that the 58%, you know, polling right now shows it at 58% and going up every day. So 58% of those polled, you know, thousands of volunteers, 190,000 of your fellow Utahns want a better system.
Thank you.
Any other audience questions? Go
I
ahead.
I have to time myself. I'd like to get the panel's reaction to...
Please start with your name, I'm sorry.
...to comments of Christine Durham on October 10th. Christine Durham being the former Chief Justice of the Utah State Supreme Court. By the way, my name is Mike Andrews. I will be voting for Proposition 4 because of what she said. Proposition 4 addresses the problem of gerrymandering in two ways. First, it creates an independent seven-member redistricting committee, commission appointed by the governor and legislative leadership. The commissioners will be persons who do not have any personal interest in the outcome of the election maps. For example, a commissioner may not be an elected official, a lobbyist, official, elected official, political party leader, or someone who serves otherwise holding a position that would present a conflict of interest. The citizenship committee will recommend election maps to the legislature, as you've said. Proposition 4, she said, will create a process for drawing legislative and congressional districts in Utah that serves voters, not legislators, and that's why she's supporting 4, and that's why I'm supporting 4, because legislators should not vote their own districts. I'd love your reactions.
Jeff, go ahead.
Justice Durham is one of the most well-respected jurists in the state of Utah, and we were delighted to have her endorsement of Better Boundaries in Proposition 4. She's an amazing woman that has served this state with distinction and honor, and I think she makes the constitutional case on why this works in Utah and why this is going to create, you know, a better process. So we were delighted to have her endorsement of Better Boundaries.
Derek, I'd like to get your reaction to that also. You've mentioned that, there may be some flaws with the independent committee made up of residents.
Yeah. Well, I certainly respect Chief Justice Durham's opinion. She's certainly earned it. I think I take issue for one thing she said, that they'll have no conflicts of interest. I think that's not possible for anyone. We are conflicted, you know, beings. So, for example, they might not have a party affiliation, but what if one of the maps being considered breaks up their city, breaks up their community, their county? Are they going to be conflicted? Yeah, of course they are, because they're just a human being like the rest of us, like the legislators who are currently drawing the maps, and like the judges who in other states come in and draw the maps. So, again, this is kind of got, we got to get beyond the nice sounding ideas that don't reflect the realities. You know, I appreciate expressing a value that we believe in. I appreciate expressing a principle that we're striving for. But to say that any policy solution is going to fully embody that, I just don't know that, that comports with any reality that I've seen in the dozen years I've been at the legislature. There are things that forward principles, that forward values, but they're always imperfect because it's an imperfect process. We're a bunch of imperfect people. We all have human nature. And so the idea that this commission will be completely independent without conflicts, I just don't think that's true.
Jeff, how do you react to that?
We're trying to mitigate conflicts, and I think when you have a 7-member commission made up of Democrats, Republicans, and unaffiliated citizens who have to put a map forward with a 2-thirds majority, there's going to be compromises, there's going to be debate, there's going to be discussions, but I think you're going to mitigate those conflicts of interest. I think that, you know, this commission is going to take place every 10 years after the census. You're going to have a 7-member commission that is going to have the press, the state, the citizens of Utah, the national press, all eyes are going to be on this citizen group. I have a lot of faith that they're going to do a great job.
Derek, a response?
Sorry, just one other element I think is, so the member who's chosen by the Speaker of the House, are they going to be conflicted? Because the Speaker of the House is going to choose a member of this commission. The Senate President is going to choose a member of this commission. Is he going to be conflicted or is she going to be conflicted by who's choosing them? You know, these people aren't just magically appearing. They're being chosen by politicians through a political mindset. And again, it gets back to the reality is they will have conflicts. The question is, are those conflicts, you know, completely overcoming the virtues of the process or not? And that's an open debate. I think there's reasonable disagreement for that. But I don't think you can really say that there won't be any conflicts or it will be completely independent.
Jason, you looked eager to respond as well.
You know, I think we're probably arguing degrees of conflicts and kinds of conflicts a little bit. I don't think we can say all conflicts are equal. I have a 3-year-old at home. When we serve him dinner, we have this plate that has little sections in it for vegetables and meat and, you know, other things like that. And if he was able to put what he wanted in each of those sections, he put French fries in every single one of them with ketchup in the last one so he could really enjoy his dinner. But his mom gets to choose what goes into that plate. And she makes sure there's protein and there's not too much salt and that he's not going to get a stomach ache, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So he's got conflicts, right? He's trying to choose what he wants. My wife definitely has conflicts when she's choosing what goes in there. But what she's trying to do is something that is for his betterment, for the good. You know, she's thinking about a higher element than just, you know, what tastes really good, but what's actually good for his dinner and for his growth. So it might be a too simplified analogy, a little bit big motherish maybe than big brotherish. But it shows that I think there's degrees of conflicts that that Better Boundaries and Prop 4 are trying to, you know, reduce and trying to move towards the human nature side that actually creates a better election system.
And if you're just joining us now on KPCW Radio, you're listening to a live broadcast of a panel discussion about Proposition 4, which if passed would establish an independent commission to draw the electoral map in Utah. We have another audience question. Go ahead.
I'm Bob Lux, resident of Park City. First of all, I'd like to say I think there's a fallacy in the argument that if you don't like your representatives who are doing the redistricting, you vote them out. If the gerrymandering by whichever party was successful, everybody's happy in their district, and there's a majority who will not turn down the current representative. So that's just a comment. The question I have relates to I was stimulated by what's happening in San Juan. Popular buzzword now in the national scene is tribalism. let's just talk about it as community. And basically, the whole process is that we're talking about is how do we represent the people? How do we choose the district to represent the people? We think of communities, whether it's cities, towns, people who have similar interests and ideas. How do we do this in a way that represents those people in those communities? And one of the biggest things that you hear about that I think people object to is splitting up towns and cities, Park City. Why is a small town of 10 or 20,000 people, whatever it is, districted into two or three districts? It doesn't make sense. You're splitting up the community. Everybody in the community is there because they want to be in that community. So the idea here is how do we do this fairly without splitting up groups that are common?
Jeff, go ahead.
You know, I agree with Derek that communities are going to have to be split up. Some communities are going to have to be split up. But I would rather have an independent commission with checks and balances making that decision as a last resort, not as it's an incumbent retention program or a partisan program. So I that's where I have faith in my fellow citizens, that they're going to sit on this commission and say, yes, we do have to divide some areas in Utah, but let's do it in a reasonable and rational way, and let's do it as a last resort.
Independent is the key word.
Any other audience questions?
And I'll give a second one. It revolves around the concept of conflicts. I have an idea that we actually thought about 8 years ago, but we didn't have the money to implement. The Fair Boundaries was an initiative similar to Better Boundaries. It was a rule-based way to draw the boundaries. So we thought, well, could we get an AI program to do it? So we talked to the computer department at the University of Utah, and they said, yeah, for $5,000, we can do that. We didn't have any money, so we didn't implement that, and we'd already not gotten on the ballot. So I'll ask all of you to take the conflicts out of it, and this is something a commission could do administratively, or the legislature could do administratively if the initiative fails. Put in a rule-based system and let a computer program do it.
Representative Wild, what do you think about that idea?
I think you would be surprised that the computers are pretty much drawing the maps now. I mean, when you have to go out and you have to start counting things, there isn't an individual there going 1, 2, 3. To count to 3 million people in the state of Utah, that is very difficult. So the origins of the map are coming out of a computer base. Now, let's talk about some of the models that are there.
Partisan input.
Yeah, so all this information goes in, and I know where you're going. So there's different models out there and where they get the information, and that's probably where you're wanting to go instead of saying a computer program.
Well, what I'm saying is you have a rule-based system. You're going to, your basic idea is to keep communities together and create compact districts.
Right.
So not break up communities. So you'd have the computer could measure how many, what's the compactness geometrically. That's a geometric measurement. And have we crossed any political boundaries?
Right.
And you have measurements on that. And a computer program could optimize that for the entire state.
And I think there's models out there right now. I'm not quite sure if they've been perfected. I did see this summer there was a professor, it seems out of the Midwest, that was working on a model like what you're talking about. So they're coming. I know they want to do it with the census.
Yeah, Derek, what do you think about the idea to take the human element out of the process altogether?
Yeah, so I guess it comes back to who's writing the rules of the algorithm, right?
Yeah.
Because that's where the conflicts will come in. So, for example, there's probably multiple ways to get equal numbers of people in equal districts by breaking up different communities, for example. So what's the rule going to be for deciding which community gets broken up? And there's where an opportunity for a conflict comes in. And it just, again, it comes back to the realities that we're dealing with. You can mitigate conflicts. you're not going to eliminate them. And so the question becomes, I think, are the set of conflicts created by one system preferable to the set of conflicts created by the current system? And we can have that debate. And I'd love to have that debate. Unfortunately, the debate exists too much on the, well, let's eliminate conflicts. And and so we never get into the deeper realities, unfortunately. But yeah, I don't think you're going to eliminate conflicts. You know, I'm not going to pretend to be a computer expert to know how the conflicts might enter in the various myriad ways in programming, but they would exist.
Jeff, what do you think?
The proposition calls for not using partisan data. So what the commission does with other sort of algorithms, they certainly have that prerogative. But one of the things that we wanted to do is take away the partisan data of how the districts are drawn. And again, I think that you'll never be able to completely take out conflict of interest, but you'll be able to mitigate them. And I think this 7-member commission with, you know, different parties, different interests, unaffiliated voters, is going to really mitigate those kind of conflicts.
So the commission setting the rules for a computer program to draw the boundaries could be the basis of what the commission decides upon or considers.
It could just follow, so it falls within the standards that are set in the proposition.
Any other questions from the audience? Please start with your name.
Hi, my name is Chris Neville. I live in Hidden Cove. One quick question. If this fails, this is kind of for anybody up here, if this proposition doesn't pass, is there anything you would do maybe differently or another pathway to kind of maybe accomplish the same goals or maybe legislation to say, hey, we kind of all agreed that this is what we wanted out of it, even though we couldn't agree where we were going and how to get there. Well, we all agreed where we were going, but not necessarily how to get there. Is there something maybe that's an alternative pathway that people would agree on more?
Derek, I'm curious to see what you think about that.
Well, I don't think you're going to find any pathway that people will really agree on. But I think you could simplify some things in the ballot initiative to make it more agreeable to more people. So, for instance, if instead of listing out all of the priorities that the maps have to follow, one thought that I've had just while we were talking here is if it would just simply said, you cannot consider incumbent addresses, right? And that's the primary and maybe the only one, because frankly, that takes out a lot of the political considerations. It doesn't take out all of them. But if you're gonna, it's when you get into trying to prevent, dictating things based on partisan balance is where you get into trouble, because even if you don't have computer data, people understand generally where partisan makeups are, and so you can't really eliminate that. So I think it's a matter of simplifying things, taking out some of the stuff that's going to throw everything into the courts, and then having a commission, which I still think is a good idea, that allows people to go and let their voice be heard on what the map should look like and what they shouldn't look like, and then just understanding that a bunch of people are going to be angry no matter what map gets passed, because some community somewhere is going to get broken up, some city is going to be broken into 2 or 3 districts, and that's just not a problem that's going to go away.
So just to be clear, you think that the only rule there should be is where current representatives or state senators live? Like that should be the only rule that kind of guides these maps?
No, what I was saying is you asked if there's one that would be more agreeable. Uh-huh. And I think if you simplified it, and that's an example of how you could simplify it, that's not the only way, and frankly, I need to put more thought into to really, come up with what I think might be a most agreeable set of rules.
Okay.
But I think if you simplified the rules, that would be one way to make it more agreeable to people.
Jason, what's your reaction?
Sure. So, the Supreme Court had 2 pitches on gerrymandering this year, and they didn't swing at the Wisconsin case or the Maryland case. So the court has changed a little bit. It's kind of hard to tell, reading those tea leaves, what could happen. But what I think a lot of people are thinking is that state-based initiatives like Proposition 4 are the way forward. There's plenty of states out there, examples of where independent redistricting works. And so you can't wait on the courts. Those lawsuits take a long time to get through. That better boundaries in this proposition is the way that I think more states are looking at it. So I don't think you could say that courts are a way that you would find any kind of reasonable satisfaction or decision in terms of looking at another solution.
Representative Wild, do you see an area where there could be a compromise or move forward on the basis of Prop 4?
I kind of agree with the ACLU over here on this side.
Put it on the radio.
I think with the cases that are going to come forward, and there's going to be more and more cases coming forward, I think you're going to have some sort of litmus test for before or even after when these maps are being drawn. Now, how that's going to be put into place, I don't know. I think this is a great start to how this is done. Maybe this is a good direction. Like I said before, I think there's some good sound principles here. How to implement it and administer it is where I'm struggling.
Any other audience questions?
Thank you.
I asked a question earlier. My name's Joel Rosenfield. I live here in Silver Springs. A couple points. One you brought up about earlier about you could vote them out, but I wonder if I happen to be a member of the majority party, and the majority party is trying to make it so there are more members of the majority party, I don't see why I would necessarily try to vote that person out. That's more of a comment. I'm glad to hear that, especially from Representative Wild, that there's a lot of interest in having this commission. I'd suggest that, as a former computer engineer for almost 30 years, that it really is a simple rule set. It's kind of like if you look at like a sports league's tiebreaker system. It's like number one is the first priority, and if beyond that, then you go to number two, then you go beyond three. It's very specific. It's very straightforward. And I think without that guideline, then if Prop 4 didn't pass and you didn't have these guidelines, then anybody could come up with anything and have as reasonable excuses, as opposed to pointing to this is our goal and this is what we should work toward. I'm curious if you have any comments on that.
Meredith, go ahead.
It sounds like that's what was the way it works last time. I mean, with donut districts and stars and stripes districts and whoever came up with whatever pretty picture, the elephant district, I don't know. It sounds like a mess. But you've also, I mean, you were saying how complicated it was, too, with the census data and to get everything accomplished in a certain amount of time by January. I would hope that having the independent commission would help streamline this process with data input, but also just from that independent perspective.
Representative Wild, what do you think?
When is more government ever streamline anything?
Derek, you also wanted to jump in.
Yeah, this is something I should have mentioned earlier, but I was reminded when you mentioned all the different types of maps that were thrown out. So that was an example of transparency in action, right? The reason there was all these maps thrown around is because the legislature created a tool for citizens, anyone out there who wanted to get involved by submitting a map. And yeah, that led to a whole bunch of maps and a bunch of stuff that you had to then sift through. And I think that's a good thing, by the way. So I would hesitate to criticize that level of transparency as being a symbol of something broken, because my guess is that's going to happen more, not less, if Proposition 4 makes things more transparent, because more people are going to get involved, and that's a good thing. But it's also going to feel like a mess, because that's what happens when a lot of people get involved in something. It's hard to control everything and everyone, and you probably don't want to control everything and everyone. That's a nice thing of being living in a free society. But that's how it's going to feel.
Jeff, you wanted to jump in as well.
I think if you believe there's transparency, this is transparency plus. This is major transparency that is at all levels of this process. And again, these are citizen volunteers on this commission. This isn't more government. This is citizens working together to come up with a better map to give to the legislature to vote on. So I think this is transparency, accountability, and a process. And I think that's something I feel like we lack is a coherent process. And this puts a structure in place that gives us a better process.
Another audience question.
Hi, this is Sharon Christensen. And there's no way you can create something that's perfect. And some people are not going to be happy. That's just the way it is. But this seems to be a wonderful, good start. And let's not let the search for the perfect be, you know what I'm trying to say. Thank you.
I couldn't have said it better. Let's not let the perfect be the enemy of good.
Yes.
I think this is going to improve process, improve accountability, improve transparency, and I think that this is going to be something we're going to be really proud of generations to come.
Thank you. Representative Wild, did you want to add something?
I just wanted to say thank you, and Proposition 4 is the only proposition, I believe, that does not have an organized opposition to it. Is that right?
I thought the legislature was
opposed to all sorts of things, but hey, organized. We're opposed to each other, so. But I think anybody looking at the principles here can see that this would better Utah. The question is, how do we get to where we want to go? And that's the question. And I applaud the people that have actually brought the discussion and made people listen. Because, I've sat on a committee with Ralph Becker before. It's the first time I've met Jeff. But I deeply admire him. And I deeply admire the people that have actually pushed this forward. Things in government aren't always simple because sometimes there's just too many layers of government. And that is what I can see going forward if this passes, is it will take government amount of time to adjust itself to what's happening. The commission will have to go out. Are you guys going to hire staff? Or are you going to use legislative staff?
They can use the legislative staff.
So that way we don't have to reinvent the wheel. Which is a positive. And so there's benefits to what's being said and what's happening here. And if we can get some of the time frames to where the public can give their input and they're not constrained on getting it passed before the next election cycle. Because when you have January 1st, people signing up to do they need to know which district they're in. That is a plain and simple fact. If you don't know which district you're in at that time, how are you going to sign up for where you're going to run?
I think we've got time for one, maybe two more questions.
Okay, thank you.
My name's Nancy Conroy. I live in Jeremy Ranch. And I want to thank you all. You've done a great job covering a whole lot of stuff, and it's kind of at the end of the evening, and I have a question that just popped into my head, slightly off topic, but maybe it's relevant, and I apologize, I don't have all the facts straight, but I read recently that Utah is one of, it's either 4 or 7, I cannot remember, states that allows straight ticket voting. And I was kind of stunned because I've lived in Utah most of my adult life, and I thought, oh, I had no idea that that wasn't allowed in most states. And I wonder if you have any thoughts about what that does in terms of solidifying people's propensity to vote, when you can vote a straight ticket, if they do a little bit less discriminating investigation of who they're voting for?
Yes.
Meredith, go ahead.
The answer is yes. It discourages, I personally find it incredibly lazy that if your own, one of the basic tenets of being a citizen is voting, and if you can't be bothered to do a little bit of research and gather some information, especially in this day and age when, as you pointed out, there's plenty of information available on the internet. The League has a great website, vote411.org. I'll put a plug in right now for that. But it's a nonpartisan information. It's not even a scorecard. It's just information provided by candidates that are running, which district you're in. Anybody can go online and put in their address, find out what races are in their districts and who's running. I've spoken with candidates that have run in the past, and one of them specifically mentioned the straight ticket party and felt that that totally was an insurmountable mountain that stood in her way of communicating with people about what she brought to the table and who she was as a candidate when that button, that circle was there, that just completely would eliminate her from consideration for people. So that's my answer.
Derek, what do you think?
Yeah, so we don't have a position on whether the state should or should not have straight ticket voting, but I can say Iowa just recently eliminated straight ticket voting last year, and so this is kind of the first, in 2017, so it was last year. I was reading some stuff on that today, in fact, and they were saying that particularly folks running down ballot are very concerned that simply people won't vote in their race. Because they don't, you know, for better or for worse, probably for worse, right? They don't do the research to know where the different candidates stand. And as to where they would vote, if they did a straight ticket, they would vote for all those races. Now we're just having less people vote if you eliminate straight ticket voting. Now, I think there's a solution to that, right? You advocate for people to get informed and try to help them be informed, help them understand who's running in what seats and what they stand for and all of that kind of thing. But it is, if you're wondering what the impact of it is, I think it seems to be a down ticket issue, and then this gets back to voter participation. You know, would you rather have somebody voting straight ticket but voting on a race, or not voting at all, with the alternative that we can change things so that hopefully they become an informed voter?
Thanks again to St. Luke's Episcopal Church for underwriting the KPCW broadcast of this forum. And a special thank you as well to all five panelists who participated this evening.